This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're thrilled today to be joined by two magnificent leaders. We've got Dr. Neil Alatraj. He's the head team physician for the Dodgers, for the Rams. He also has worked with people like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and a number of elite athletes. We've also got Nader Sami. Nader is the CEO of National Medical Billing Services. It's had tremendous success in bringing revenue cycle to surgery centers and practices. He's done a second or third iteration of revenue cycle companies and really a wonderful person and wonderful leader as well. We're going to talk about the business and topic of orthopedics today. No one better than Dr. Alatraj to talk about this. Nader also does a ton of work with orthopedic practices and surgery centers. But before we get started, I'll ask Dr. Alatraj, I'll ask Nader to introduce themselves. Dr. Alatraj, let me ask you to tee up and just give a brief introduction of yourself.
So, yes, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And I appreciate the constant information you provide to those of us in orthopedic surgery, especially in the outpatient type of environment. So, you know, your information is always very, very helpful. I've been practicing at the Curl and Job Orthopedic Clinic here in Los Angeles for 30 years, and my practice is focused on sports medicine, athletic medicine, and orthopedics geared towards the active person and especially the athlete. So, you know, we've had the good fortune to be able to continue to grow that kind of a focus and presence in what we do in orthopedic surgery. And primarily we do it in the vast majority of what we do is in the outpatient setting.
So magnificent. And just that your patient list looks like a who's who of greatest professional athletes. And so just a pleasure to visit with you. Nader, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure, Scott. And unfortunately, I'm not one of those elite athletes on his list of patients. So that's unfortunate. But I started life as a corporate finance attorney and then moved into investment banking in New York and in San Francisco and ended up leaving to start a revenue cycle company in 2000, which we built that up and ended up exiting, you know, that business. At which time I ended up acquiring National Medical in 2010. So for the last 10 years, I've been partnered with Lisa Rock, who's the founder of the company. And we've been building and growing the organization. And our core focus is the surgery center world. And we do everything from managed care contracts through all revenue cycle aspects and have a kind of a heavy technology and analytics component to what we do. And so we have, you know, roughly 300 surgery center clients around the country that we do work for. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to have Cedars-Sinai and Dr. Alatraj as one of those clients.
Well, in the reality is you understate yourself as an athlete, because I've seen you on the tennis court. You might not be Tom Brady, but you hold your own fairly well.
Thank you.
Dr. Alatraj, you've had this remarkable career. You're one of the most prominent orthopedic surgeon working with elite athletes today. If you're not the most prominent, you're on a very, very short list. You're at the Curl and Job Clinic, magnificent clinic back in the day, Frank Job and so forth. Talk about how you went about building your career and your practice that led you to this world.
Well, you know, I think the formula is pretty straightforward and simple, and it probably translates into every other profession and field that you can get into. You know, the if you are focused and you realize, you know, what your purpose was to do, then that makes things simple, because everything that you do is geared towards truly what you're motivated and what is, you know, comes to you as far as what you feel like you were meant to focus your situation on. But beyond that, and I think that has to be there for everybody, but beyond that, the choices you make early on in your career, I think, will set you on the path to success one way or another. And so I was lucky enough to come and do my fellowship at a place where they were doing exactly what I had always hoped to do, but doing it at the top level at that point in the country, and then working hard with the guys that were here in the fellowship program at Curl and Job, then I was asked to stay on here in the group, and my choices there then in doing that really is what made me successful. If I've had any success, it's because people that were leaders in the profession, for whatever reason, took an interest in me and my career and put me in a position where I could succeed. And so to say that I'm self-made, by any means couldn't be a more false statement. I think that, you work hard and you hope that somebody takes an interest in you and those people are on the forefront or thought leaders in what you're doing. And I was lucky enough to have that happen. So, I think that then after that, I learned from the people that taught me. I learned how they took care of people and athletes especially. And I paid attention to what worked for them, and I tried to incorporate that into how I conducted myself. So I think that I'm a pretty much of a conglomerate of the great people that put me in this position to begin with.
Let me ask you a question. When you work with ordinary human beings, people like myself or not or others, that are ability to use our knees, use our shoulders, place which is very, very important to us. But at the same time, when you work with these unique athletes, whether it's Tom Brady, of course, as well as the 10th Super Bowl, or a whole host of athletes you've worked with, to them, it's not just the enjoyment of life, their functionality in life, it's how they make their living. At what point was it, do you recall, when pro athletes or people that might have been great college athletes started to seek you out, started to say, I want Dr. Alatraj because this is so important to me. I need the best. Do you remember when that was in your career? And what did that feel like? Was that daunting when people of a certain stature? I mean, it's daunting when any patient seeks you out and says, I need your help. Was it particularly daunting when some of the great athletes started to do so?
Well, yeah, I distinctly remember the period that it was, I was coming along at a time when we were transitioning a lot of what we were doing, with open surgery to less and less invasive surgery into arthroscopic surgery. And so my practice has always been filled with a great combination of open operations, the operations that are still done open, like Tommy John operations that my senior partner, Frank Job, developed that invented that operation and taught me. So those are one of the few operations that are still done solely arthroscopically that we do very commonly. But also we were transitioning a lot of what we were doing in the shoulder and elbow and knee from open to arthroscopic. My mentors embraced that change. Frank Job didn't come along at a time with the arthroscope and minimally invasive procedures, but he saw what was on the horizon and he embraced it and encouraged me to continue to work on those types of techniques and to be able to do arthroscopically what he was able to do open. And so he started to introduce me to agents and athletes that, and when they would come and see him, and I was helping him, and he said he would introduce me as his partner that was working with him and operating with him and developing some newer techniques. And so he embraced the change. He wasn't threatened by it by any means. And I was the beneficiary of that. So very early on, some of the big name people that were coming in to see him were than just getting sent right into the next exam room to, and he was in, introducing them to me. And so it was doing that and then working as well as I could with those people and meeting with some good results. And so one thing built on another and it sort of established me.
Fascinating. Did you have to have to be a lefty to get the Tommy John surgery, or can righties get it?
Well, Frank Jobe was left-handed, and so did was your question, do you have to be a lefty to get Tommy John surgery?
Exactly.
Well, you know, when I learned to do the procedure from one of the most elegant surgeons I've ever seen, who was Frank Jobe, and he was left-handed. So, you know, I tried to do a mirror image of everything that he did. But the majority of the patients that he operated on were righties, even though Tommy John himself was, the namesake of the operation, the famous lefty.
No, I understand. But it's fascinating how that became – it's one of the only surgeries that I know of that is really known as after a particular pitcher or athlete or player. It's really known as the Tommy John surgery to this day, which is really fascinating because people of the generation after us don't even know what Tommy John really was. But it's still very much known as that surgery. It's a fascinating thing.
Well, that was more because of Frank Jobe than anything, you know, because Frank Jobe, you know, for the people that knew him, he was way too modest. He was a true Southern gentleman, way too modest to name anything after him. You know, there were some other things that were named after him, some instruments and some exam techniques for the shoulder and for the elbow. But he would never refer to those things that had been named after him by other people. He would never, when he was giving lectures, would never call it by his name. And so there was no way that he was ever going to name an operation, even though, you know, he pioneered it. He was never going to name that after himself. He, true to form, he always gave the credit for any of the hard work and the recovery and the ultimate success that these athletes would have, you know, after their injury or after surgery. He gave the credit to them. And I think that, you know, so that for those of the people that knew him would actually, you know, it would be very, very natural. He would name it after the athlete, not himself.
Well, thank goodness he didn't do the surgery originally on Frank Tanana or somebody else. It would not roll off the tongue in the same way. Thank goodness for all of us. But Dr. Alatraz, let me ask you this question. Higher acuity orthopedics moving to surgery centers, what do you see over the next 2 to 5 years? What additional things do you see moving to surgery centers, outpatient settings?
Well, you know, as our patient population, including the aging population, are healthier and healthier, and we're certainly seeing already. And there's going to be, I think, just a continued explosion of the kinds of cases like total joint arthroplasty and even spine surgery that's going to be done in ASCs and outpatient setting. And, you know, the less and less invasive techniques, computer and robotic controlled guidance and operations, both for total joint arthroplasty and now even for spine, and the ability to get radiographic controlled approaches and get that equipment into the outpatient setting is really going to lay the stage for most of these things in this population to be done at these ASCs. And I think it's a big advancement. It's a big advantage for the patients, especially, to be done in a setting where it's highly focused on exactly what they need and what they want, and to be able to do it and go home and leave the resources of an inpatient setting to patients that actually need it.
Well, fantastic. And talk about new innovative technologies. You talked about the movement from open to minimally invasive. Talk a little bit further about what innovative technologies have helped move orthopedics to ASCs, and what do you see, either already existing or on the cusp of being in the business?
I think, you know, one of the things that we need to acknowledge is that without some of the advances in anesthesia and pain management and pain control, it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to do what we do as an outpatient. And so the technology, not only in what has enabled the orthopedic surgeon to do things with less and less invasiveness and with less surgical trauma, I mean, the implants we use now are even for arthroscopic repairs are tiny. So the surgical morbidity is significantly less. But there's no question what our anesthesiologists are able to do now with nerve blocks and long-acting anesthetics have made surgery, including arthroplasty and some of the bigger operations that I do around the knee, shoulder, and elbow, much more tolerable for patients. And so, pain management and the newer medications and the technology around nerve blocks and things is a paramount factor in enabling us to do what we do. So that technology, I think, is as important as some of the technology that's helped us to become less invasive with our techniques.
No, fascinating and so right on point. Thank you very much. Any advice you would have for young, up-and-coming physicians or orthopedic surgeons? They want to have great careers. They want to have fulfilling careers. Any thoughts or piece of advice you give to a young orthopedic surgeon trying to have a great career?
I think the problem, my best piece of advice I could give you, and this is from personal experience, and it's worked. Probably the biggest thing in my life, in my career that's worked, is that, all else being equal, people have different economic needs and families and things like that. But if at all possible, when faced with a choice between money and mentor, always choose mentor. If you have the ability, if you're lucky enough to be able to do that when you don't have important people depending on you, where you don't have the luxury to make that choice. If you do, and I would do everything you can to give yourself the opportunity to make that choice. Always choose mentor over money, because the rest of it, the bigger contract that you might get, the higher reimbursement, all the things that may comes along more assuredly if you have maximized your potential for your career. And in our profession, there's no way to do that better than being mentored and being able to learn how to take great care of patients, so that your reputation is because you are known to be able to take really great care of patients, even more so than taking care of great patients. You want to be known as the person that gives great care rather than who you're giving the great care to. And then your mentor will put you in a situation where you can succeed. So that's my biggest piece of advice. And it may not sound too unique to medicine, but it certainly, I think, is very important.
But it's really great advice. You worry first about getting great experience, great mentorship, becoming great at what you do, and the money will follow. If you worry first about maximizing each dollar, you're probably going to shortchange your career in the long run. Probably better to really worry about being great at what you do and getting great guidance, great mentorship, than trying to eke out the last nickel in the first contract or in your career and so forth. I think it's great, great advice. Nader, I mean, to turn to you, I will deck Dr. Alatraj. Will Tom Brady still be playing at 53, or is there some feeling on his ability to keep playing? We won't bet against him. Nader, let me ask you a couple questions on the business side of orthopedics and surgery centers. Yeah. You guys have built a remarkable company, remarkable service orientation. As these cases, higher acuity orthopedic cases, move to the ASC setting, what are some of the financial and operational challenges that have to be addressed? What do people have to do to make sure that these work in a surgery center setting?
No, Scott, I think it's a great question. We work obviously with surgery centers around the country and a lot of orthopedics and spine, bigger, higher acuity case areas like that are newer and emerging in terms of these big ticket items moving toward the surgery centers. And what we always try to counsel everyone on is saying, you guys have worked really hard to build a practice and have a methodology and develop these best practice clinical protocols that you've moved to the surgery center. You've invested the time and effort and thoughtfulness to prepare for all of that. And with that will come, you know, significant financial rewards, but there's also the opportunity for significant financial losses if not handled correctly. And so the big pieces, when you think about that point, to really focus on committing to the business side as much as you have, and once you've established that clinical side and committing those resources there, you know, if you kind of break it down into the buckets, is first and foremost is your managed care contracts drives everything from that standpoint. So you need to negotiate good, strong managed care contracts for these high acuity cases that are coming over that have likely not been contemplated by your contracts in the past. And you need really good, financial data. You need really good, you need financial data strong. You need your detailed costs. You need to understand the market data. It's all super critical to put you in the best position to negotiate those best rates for, you know, like I said, if you're bringing total joints over, whatever the procedure is. And then operationally, you really have to make sure that your front desk and your process is set up correctly there, starting with your coordination with the schedulers at the surgeon's office. You know, I've had personal experience where you go through the process and then, you know, someone just turns to you and says, hey, do you want to have your procedure in a hospital or do you want to have it in the surgery center? And that's just the question. You know, luckily I live in this world, so I have some idea of how to think through that. Most people don't really know. And there's not really a lot of education from that surgeon's office where there's, you know, information or pamphlets or somebody to talk to walk someone through why you might want to have it in a hospital or why you might want to have it in a surgery center, some of the pros and cons, the cost benefits, the convenience benefits, the scheduling, all of that. So I think that's really important. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that. They're like, how do we grow our volume? Like the first, you know, the first opportunity, obviously you need to do it. The right patients need to go there. Not, yeah, obviously you don't want to be too aggressive, but that is a really important place and a step to have a strong process to educate the patients. And then having a good pre-auth process, so you're making sure all of those procedures are authorized, so you're not getting denials for it not being medically necessary, not being authorized. Then having a good financial counselor who's there again to talk through the patients, create a really positive patient experience for everybody. And obviously to collecting the patient responsibility is a very important, you know, component of profitability in today's, you know, world of medicine. And then of course, having experts to understand how to code, how to sequence correctly, and to maximize those dollars, but in a highly compliant way. And then have a really strong AR and appeals team that can fight, because the insurance companies, and the bigger those dollars get in that surgery center, the more likely there's going to be a denial, and just a flat out denial, and force you to make your case, you know, on the back end. And then tying all that together with really strong analytics so that you and your entire organization can be informed and understand what you're doing, what's working, you know, from a business standpoint, what's not working, what are you getting paid on, how much are you getting paid, how much are you getting paid, you know, for these procedures by these different payers, et cetera. So that full picture, I think, is really important, because again, these are big dollars at stake.
And Nader, talk for a second about this. Your group has done an unbelievable job of just sort of blocking and tackling and working with surgery centers and orthopedic practices in an intelligent way. Talk about the type of reimbursement and margin structure for the higher acuity cases. And give us an example of a couple of the higher acuity cases. Are we talking about total joints, knees, hips? What are we talking about in terms of when we talk about higher acuity cases? And what can these mean for revenue growth in the business?
Sure. So in general, you know, orthopedics, as we're talking and focused on here, is as a general rule, a higher, you know, higher reimbursement per case specialty than most. I would say, you know, ortho and spine are probably at the top of the list. Cardiology probably up there too, those three. And but staying focused, the most active high acuity procedure that's moved here over the last few years has been the total joint. So whether it's the knee, knees and hips heavily, shoulders some, but knees and hips would be one and two, you know, and in that order. And there, obviously it goes back to the how you negotiate your managed care contracts, but the reimbursement's significant. So Medicare, you know, before any sort of cost adjustments, paying $8,600 for a knee. I would say if you roughly double that, that's probably close to your kind of industry average for, you know, a commercial payer. So you're talking, you know, 15 to 20,000. We have some that you'll see in certain markets that may still pay 30,000+, you know, for a total knee replacement, for example. And those are, again, how you manage the process and managing your implant costs and such are important. But as a general rule, those are 50 to 60% type EBITDA margin procedures. And as a result, you can move the needle very, very fast from a financial perspective, as it relates to your surgery center, by adding these types of cases. So I'll just give a quick example. If you had a multi-specialty center doing 300 cases a month and averaging $2,000 of cash per case, so therefore generating, you know, $600,000 a month or $7.2 million a year of revenue. If you assume that's a normal solid surgery center to 20% EBITDA margin, you'd be generating about $1.4 million of EBITDA. And, you know, that sort of profiled center is probably going to get, you know, roughly, let's just say, if you were going to look at putting an equity value on that business, it's likely going to get, let's say 7 times that EBITDA. So you're roughly around a $10 million business in terms of the value of the organization. Now, if you take that same exact center and we're going to go add 30 total joints a month to that center, which is not small volume, but you're talking about adding roughly 10% volume to your entire surgery center and using an average of $15,000 per case, that would add $450,000 a month or $5.4 million of revenue. So you're not quite, but getting close to doubling the revenue of your center by adding 10% of additional cases if they're the right cases. But more importantly, your EBITDA at a 50% margin on that is another $2.7 million. So you had $1.4 million of EBITDA before. By adding that, you just added $2.7 million of EBITDA to get to $4.1 million. So now if you look at that, not only did you go, you almost triple your profitability, which is great from a distribution standpoint for everyone, but you've also changed your multiple profile. You're not going to be a 7x EBITDA business when you're growing at that rate and with those kinds of margins. You're probably looking very comfortably at 10, if not even 12+ times EBITDA. But if you just apply a 10x multiple there, you've taken a $10 million business, added 10% volume to your surgery center, and become a $40 million valuation to your business. So it's really very, there aren't too many opportunities in life to generate that kind of value creation with that sort of a small impact from a pure volume standpoint. So, you know, there's obviously, and we have clients that actually fit exactly the profile of what I said. So it's not a really theoretical concept. If these things start to happen, it really does change the financial profile of the surgery centers in very, very, you know, short order. So it's an exciting time to be in the surgery center world, and certainly an exciting time to be in a specialty like orthopedics from a business standpoint.
Thank you very, very much. Just magnificent. And what you're really talking about is moving cases where these cases are the right cases to be done in that environment for patients. So at the end of the day, yes, there's a big economic upside, but it really ought to be based on, you know, side by side with that, with the fact that this is a better and safer environment for a lot of these patients, where it could be done capably in a surgery center, in a place with hopefully just a, you know, a very sterile, very safe environment, and great surgeons, great teams that are really focused on it. I want to thank our two guests today, Dr. Neil Alatraj, one of the most famous orthopedic surgeons in the country today, Nader Sami, one of the most successful revenue cycle companies in the country and just a terrific leader and principled person. Dr. Alatraj, Nader, I want to thank you very much for talking about orthopedics today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just a pleasure to visit with both of you.
Thank you, Scott. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much. And I learned a lot from Nader. That was excellent synopsis of where we are and where we're going.
Well, thank you. It was enjoyable. And, thanks, Scott, for having us, and Dr. Eltrage for being on. Truly an honor.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much.